Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I was thinking to myself this morning, what does this country need more of, lawyers or plumbers? We have long sort of looked down our noses at electricians, at the master trades of all varieties, master plumbers, tradesmen, carpenters, you know, specialty carpentry. And these are jobs that, I'm sorry, the bots are not going to come and save us. You know, a bot can do the job of a legal assistant a lot easier than it can do the job of coming to your house and dismantling your pipes or repairing a leaking sewage pipe. And so I was fascinated by this local nonprofit in Charlotte called She Built This City. I saw their van at a co-working space before I ever knew anything about it. And so when I saw that their executive director was named one of the great 28 by Q City Metro, I said, I want to talk to this woman. Her name is Latoya Faustin, and she is just fascinating. And we ended up talking outside of the co-working space where they're no longer located, but you'll hear some wind in the background. And also, she brought along her son, who just got a big-time acting gig in second grade, no less. Latoya Faustin.
In the 1970s, when the trades were taken out of schools, we saw people of color in rural communities hurt the worst by that decision.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing, because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, ho there, and welcome to In Her Words, the podcast. I'm Stuart Watson. I've already given you the intro, so I want to tell you there's so much packed into this conversation about equity, about inclusion, about race, about gendered roles, about motherhood. It just goes on and on. But it all comes in the overall package of a brilliant, an interesting young leader named Latoya Faustin.
Where were you born?
I was born in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hospital or home?
Hospital.
For your mother, you're number what of how many?
I am number one of one.
The one and the only.
The one and the only.
Did you grow up in Greensboro?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did. I enjoyed Greensboro. I was blessed and fortunate to experience a lot of different activities and development opportunities that leadership that Greensboro had to offer, from the Greensboro Youth Council to the Youth Leadership Greensboro, all kinds of things that I was able to and fortunate enough to participate in. So I Greensboro is home, always will be home, and grateful for what it provided for me.
When you were really little, like younger than your son here, your mother would have described you how?
I was quiet. I was a really quiet little girl. I cried a lot when I was a little girl. I kept a lot in. I was shy. I was always with her. At that age, I think we knew I liked to dance.
What were you keeping in?
Oh, wow. All kinds of stuff. I think I learned to process the world silently. And so when things happen around me, I either got the indirect or direct message that you don't ask questions about things, you just sort of figure it out. And so I spent a lot of my childhood interpreting the world around me, you know, whether it's, you know, why someone did something, how a system works, or, you know, how relationships and people interact. as I've gotten older, I realize I have a knack for finding patterns in people and their behavior. It may have come from that time in my life where all I did was observe, you know, and take in information.
So what did you observe about the world that as you grew up, you were like, I was really smart. I was right about that.
Oh, wow. There's lots of little like nuggets I picked up along the way. Some of my early observations about just how things work were around racism, systemic racism within the education system. I was in a elementary school, predominantly white elementary school. I was one of, there were people of color, there were black people there, but there was a distinction between the academically gifted students and those who were not. It was a magnet school. And so the academically gifted students, most of them from my class were all white people. Around about third grade, I believe I was tested based upon my test scores and found out that I was also academically gifted and I was assigned to those classes, but I was the only black person in that class. And it was through those early elementary school years, I saw, again, wouldn't have been able to put words to it, but I absorbed how I was treated differently in those different environments. And so when I was amongst my friends who might have been deemed not as academically on it versus when I was in the academically gifted classes and how they were treated, the freedoms they were given, the kinds of questions they were asked, behaviors that were accepted versus when you're not in those environments, same behaviors are treated very differently. And so I steadily picked those up. One example I like to use is that in elementary school, teacher had given me an assignment and I didn't understand it. And I wrote, "I don't understand this," on the paper. And I was chastised for that. Like I was being disrespectful to the teacher. Later in middle school, I was in the honors program. Same thing. Something paper I was given, I put, "I don't understand this." I was praised for being aware of my learning needs and advocating for myself. And so that was one of my first lessons of like, same behaviors, depending on the environment, are treated very differently. And you then intake different messages about yourself based upon those things.
That's a beautiful example, because if you had really shut down, then you could have not trusted your gut.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to trust your gut the second time around.
Yeah. That's a really good observation, because it was one of those things of like, I didn't shut down. And I don't know what in me, because I was the quiet girl, you know? I don't know what in me said it's okay to do that again, because it was genuine. Like, I wasn't trying to be a smart aleck or like, you know, being disrespectful. It was like, I legitimately don't understand this. And I'm writing enough to tell you that versus leaving it blank. And I'm just grateful for my teachers who didn't shut me down the second time, because it might have been a different outcome after that, but just was able to empower me with the fact that you can advocate. It is not a sin to not know. It is not a sin to ask a question. And it is powerful to be able to advocate for what you need in a space. When you're being like quizzed or assessed, it's okay to ask. It's okay not to know. And I think that is it's taken me a while, you know, to get there where I ask questions with boldness, because I know it is a valid question. You know, I know that there's no stupid questions. People say that, but they make it feel like you're stupid sometimes when you ask questions. I know that my questions are valid regardless, because I trust my brain to have thought through. And if I have the question, I know somebody else in their room got the question.
Well, what did your mother teach you that you use now, that you're a mom?
Well, my mother was a single mother. I am a single mother. I think my mother did a lot of indirect teaching. She took care of all of my needs and lots and most of my wants, actually. I didn't realize how much of a sacrifice that was for her, you know, until I got older.
What kind of job did she have?
She worked. My mother worked at Bell South. She started there when she was 18 years old. She was a switchboard operator back in the day.
I'm showing, pulling the plug out, putting the plug in.
Think Andy Griffin, like, you want to speak to? Okay, let me connect you. She was a switchboard operator back then, and then she stayed with that company for 40 years, and she retired from there when I was in graduate school. And so she went through different, you know, she went to school and got her degree and became different titles, but ended up being an executive assistant when she retired. And she taught me what it means to be faithful to an organization. But really, as a young girl, she was always there. So, you know, whatever I did, and there was many things, whether it was violin concert or ballet lesson or bowling league tournament, because she put me in everything, my mother was always there. There was never a question, you know, whether she was going to be there for me. And so that is something that she has instilled in me, that why my son is sitting beside me today on a Wednesday afternoon is I'm trying to adjust my life so that I can always be there for him. And so we're homeschooling now as a full-time working mother. I don't know what in the world I was thinking, but I wanted to ensure that we could cultivate a life that I could always be there for him. And I had to opt out of some traditional systems to ensure that we could make that happen. And now, as a 41-year-old mother, my mother is still here for me and supporting me in my homeschooling of my son.
What did your mother, what's an example of where you said, my mother may work all day, but she's got my back. She's gonna be.
Yeah. So between the two of us, I'm most certainly the fighter. I'm the one that's gonna challenge the systems. And so oftentimes, I just need an adult to co-sign. I need somebody to co-sign my craziness. I'm gonna get nobody in trouble with this story. I was in high school. I was taking calculus. Yes, I think I was taking high school calculus. And this particular teacher, he wasn't teaching us. He would spend class time talking about politics and sports and things of that nature and would not teach the calculus. And I had gotten accepted early admission to Elon University.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Obviously bright.
And I was in applied business calculus. I had already got my schedule. And so at that point, high school wasn't even my consideration. It's like, I'm about to go to these classes and you will prepare me for my class. And so while my other classmates almost considered it like a coast class, because what he would do is not teach, give us a test. Of course, we would all fail. He'd give us C's and D's to keep us quiet. Oh, God, I hope I'm not going to get in trouble. But like, that's what would happen. And so everybody's like, Zoe, be quiet. I'm like, I have a question about this. No, I want to learn this.
I'm going to need this.
Like, I'm going to need this. Like, again, the present circumstances did not mean anything to me anymore. It's like, I need to know this information.
Yeah, and social promotion was not going to work
it
for LaToya.
Because I need to know the information. You're going to have me and Elon looking stupid. Like, right. I need to know these answers. And so I went to my mom and I told her what was going on, and she scheduled a meeting with the principal for her and I to have the conversation with him. And it was she did the adult thing to advocate and get me in the door, and I had the conversation directly to the principal of what was going on in the classroom.
And also, she showed you that you can be insistent without getting mad.
Yeah.
Having to make somebody wrong.
I got mad, Stuart. I don't know.
But did your mother get mad?
She did not.
She just went and addressed it, right?
She went. Mm-hmm.
And then how did you end up learning calculus?
He ended up teaching. And I honestly don't remember all the details after that, but things changed in the class of what we were able to do. And I came after school to get more help, came during lunch to get more help to ensure that I understood the concepts.
Wow.
Yeah.
What'd you want to be when you grew up?
He asked me that question
if
yesterday.
If we'd have said when you were like his age or a little bit older,
yeah.
What'd you want to be?
So there were a few things I wanted to be. At his age, I would have said a baby doctor, pediatrician. I would say around 9, 10 years
OB old. Or pediatrician?
Good question. I was pediatrician, the doctor that takes care of the babies.
Kid doctor.
Yes. And then a little bit older, it was entrepreneur. I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I want to say a little bit older, like maybe 5th, 6th grade. But around, I think it was, I honestly don't remember. Yeah, going from high school to college and college to post-college, I joined Teach for America. I actually wanted to be a lawyer. I had read this book, I forget the exact name, something to the extent of like the social working lawyer. So the lawyer who had a social work agenda and advocated for families and making sure that families could stay together and systems of, you know, things of that nature. And so I went to college and then I went to Teach for America, thinking that after Teach for America, I was going to be a lawyer. I was gonna be a lawyer after that. But I did not become a lawyer.
What?
I skipped one. I skipped the career. Sixth grade, I remember I wrote my end of year test. What do you want to be when you grow up? I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to be a mommy.
Congratulations.
That was one of the things that I wanted to be. And so I connect those two things, the pediatrician and the mom, because I love babies. I still love babies. I love children. I love caring for children. I love teaching children. And so that era of my life, it was, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. The entrepreneur was about being able to make decisions. Being able to make decisions and innovate and create. I remember there were some projects that we did in elementary school around like an invention that you could create to change the world. I think things like that really intrigued me. And so I liked the concept of doing your own business, you know, creating your own business. But the law, it was all about advocacy. That fight that grew in me, you know, between middle and high school, a passion that sometimes overflows. I wanted to fight for the people and the systems and the injustices that I saw every day. Be a voice for those who did not have a voice to advocate for themselves. I backed down from being a lawyer because I realized how passionate I am about stuff and not knowing if I could take the emotional toil of the fights that I would take on, because if I took on a fight, it was a fight that I wanted to win and I cared deeply about, and I didn't know if I could have the emotional distance to maintain that work. And here I am leaving a nonprofit with the same emotional fight that I wonder, could I make that separation and make the longevity of it work?
Well, it's a good thing, because protector and defender are kind of two different things. It's whether you're going to be the mama bear that goes on the offensive to take somebody out, or whether you're going to be the mama bear who holds back and says, don't step 1 foot toward this little baby bear. Whether you're going to stand still and just be quiet and wait and say with your eyes and your growl, or whether you're going to go out after them.
Yeah, that is a good distinction.
So give me a, for instance, now you are age?
I'm 41.
Wow. I would be very bad guesser at the state fair. I would be a very bad guesser. Give me an example, especially at 41. I was going to say at 31.
Oh, thank you.
Where... there was a time when you would have ripped somebody's head off, and now you take a deep breath, or what's your process for saying, this isn't the time, we're not going to show the claws?
That's a really good question, Stuart, because I still show the claws on a regular basis. I think that for me, though, it's, you know, that's a good, it isn't always about showing the claws. It's about knowing my own power. And when I don't, this is not even my fight, I can actually just walk away. There's more power in walking away from this than me engaging with you. So whether that's taking my business away from a company that I don't agree with, or a partner that is not treating us right, it isn't about like, I'm gonna fight this out with you. It's like, well, thank you so much. I'm gonna actually go do business over here. Like the power of the walk away, and is something that I am embracing and owning, is that there is power in that. And to say like this, I'm just not going to do business here. Thank you. I'm not going to have. Whereas the younger Latoya would have like, can I speak to your manager? Like this is not how you're going to treat me. Thank you so much. We're actually just not going to. We're not going to patronize here anymore. Thank you.
And so it's the old line: pick your fights.
Yeah.
Can't be fighting everybody.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd just be exhausted.
Right. Yeah. Very true.
Okay. Now going all the way back, what is an observation that you had as a child where you read the room wrong?
Ooh.
Where you were off by yourself and somebody had to explain to you, LaToya, they're not out to get you. They just don't care.
Mm.
Where can you give grace now that at the time you would have been guns loaded?
First situation that came to mind was when I was in, I believe I was in college. I was a double major in communications and Spanish. And I had worked as a Spanish language interpreter. And so I was at a church and I had become the Spanish language interpreter for that Spanish population at the church. And I was standing in front of the congregation and interpreting what I thought the speaker was saying. And apparently I had got something wrong. And the way that he looked at me and like came and prayed over me that my ears would hear and my mouth would say the right things. Stuart, I just cried. I cried there in front of that church for the whole rest of the service. Apparently, I didn't get something quite right according to his liking. And he stopped the whole service to come and, in his opinion, pray for me.
Well, that's shaming.
To say the least. And when I tell you, I still sit up there, but I cried the entire time. Speaking
did
Spanish.
Did anybody in the congregation come up and say, what's wrong? Or,
my
it's
friends,
okay.
My friends were sitting in there like, you're doing good, LaToya. Because Spanish is not my first. I'm about to cry right now. Spanish was not my first language. And so it was a very intimidating space to be in. But they were just sitting there looking at me like, you're doing fine. But yeah, no. So that was that's what my first was when I read it wrong. What I can say I read that wrong. I think I read that right, but the audience was like not, you know, being judgmental of me in that situation.
But it's also not that big a deal. I mean,
exactly.
Yes. It was a bigger deal to him than it was to them.
Exactly.
That was about his ego. Little ego.
Yes, Lord Jesus. So that was where my brain first went with when you got that example. But somewhere where I would give grace now, where I didn't then. I was a first year teacher. I was so bold. I was a first year teacher and we were doing something, teaching English, and we were going to have a staff meeting and we were waiting on the principal to come. And the principal was late. Like really late, and we were just sitting there and he walked in the room and I don't know what I said, Stuart, but I said something that wasn't respectful of who he was and his schedule and things, but something to extend, like I got work to do, like I teach kids to teach, you wasting, like why are you late? And he just sort of looked at me and he just kept going about like to his points. Now as a person that is almost always late because I've had 10,000 things to do, I wish somebody would say something to me about
Well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
You had a meeting with staff before this. How
yes.
many of the staff?
21. 21
okay.
staff, yes.
And when can you say to people, I've got to go. I can't do this right now. Like, what would happen if you just said, can we table this? Can we talk on the phone while I go?
There's definitely a time, and I had to do that to a few people today as well. I think there's the when you can do it, and then what it's about. It depends. Anything that's gonna affect someone's money, you have to handle immediately. Like, you have to make sure that they feel secure, or if whether it's a partner, sponsor, a staff member, their paycheck, those things, I have to adjust whatever else I was doing to make sure that those things are taken care of. If it's a decision that needs to be made only by me, then that is a can we talk, you know, walk and talk kind of thing. And then there's the that needs to be pushed back till tomorrow. So I try to have, there is both the when, but also the what. Try to distinguish between like, can this happen right now? Or if I don't handle this, you're not going to be able to move forward with this sponsorship, or this was actually your reimbursement that you were due, and you need to, like, those kind of, I don't play with people's money. I don't play, like, stuff like that impacts their livelihood. that always comes first, and I would make anything and everybody wait for that, because I would want the same thing for me. Most other things I try to either delegate, or can we push that back, or can we walk and talk kind of thing.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Who's the best boss you ever had, and what did they teach you?
There's usually two people I point to whenever that question is asked. The first one is LaTanya Richmond. She was my very first boss when I was at Elon. It was then college, became university. She was the head of multicultural affairs, and I was her like student intern. I believe that I learned more from her in the 3 years that I worked under her than I did from any of the classes I took at Elon. The classes were glorious, very prestigious education, but the real life, how you get stuff done and handle things, hands down, I learned from her. The second boss that I reference is one here in Charlotte. His name is Jake House. He was the executive director of another nonprofit called Citizen Schools. He was the one who showed me how you lead with passion and integrity. He was the one who was the executive director. Citizen Schools was an education-based nonprofit that pushed into middle schools to provide them with real-world learning experiences. Mm-hmm. And so we had partners like Bank of America, Siemens Energy, Microsoft coming and teach middle schoolers, you know, some of what they knew. And if I was short a staff member that day, or if there was a fight that needed to be put out and I got pulled somewhere else, I could call Jake. And whatever meeting was on Jake's calendar, whether it was Microsoft or Bank of America, Jake was on campus in his suit and tie doing lunch duty so that I could handle whatever needed to be done on campus. And he did that knowing that, yes, we need that money, but if my staff is not taking, like if the needs of my staff are not taken care of, then none of this matters. And so he helped me to see like, what, how do you make your team feel prioritized? Because especially in nonprofits that can often be thankless, knowing that you are valued in the work that you're valued in, your supervisor, your leader knows that that is happening, that is priceless. And so I can't, again, hindsight is 2020, now that I am that executive director and knowing that some meetings I can't cancel, like I see even more the value of what he was doing to ensure that our team felt supported and had what we needed to be successful.
Why'd you decide to be a mom?
I just love being a mom. I absolutely love being a mom. I don't even know that it was like the decision. It was like, this is what's going to happen. I don't even know if it was a decision. It was like, yes, here comes the baby. And we were so, so excited. Every single moment of my pregnancy, the good, the bad, and the ugly, I cherish. The bond, I always tell my son, I'll say, nobody knows you better than me. We share the body. Like, I'm your mother.
Without me, there is no
yeah.
you.
And so it's my favorite thing always. And I love being a mother. It is hard. And I tell him that. Being a mom, being a parent, period, is hard. I try to practice conscious discipline. And so, you know, consequences that matter and mean things. And how do you control your emotions? And emotions are okay. How do you express them? That stuff that I never got. So when we talk about my mom and how she raised me, she did a lot of being there physically, but not a lot of the emotional presence was demonstrated. And so sometimes it's him and I learning together. How are we going to handle these big feelings that we both have right now? They're okay to have, but let's how do we still talk to each other in love to ensure that we can feel that?
Why did you decide to homeschool?
There's a few reasons. Can I give them all the reasons? Is that okay?
Yes.
So there's a few reasons why we've chosen to homeschool. One, my son is an actor. And so
congratulations.
I know that this podcast will come out later, but if you check out The Conner season 6, episode 4, which actually airs tonight, you'll see a young Thaddeus Faustin on that episode. So his schedule has become very demanding. The auditions and the travel and things is we've tried the public system.
That's a big show.
It is.
That's a network show.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm interviewing the wrong person.
He actually said that in the car. He said, "You know, mommy, I'm the one used to be in."
You're the star.
That's exactly
Listen,
what he said.
Your attention will come later. Yeah.
So that is
now
one.
It's the Latoya show.
But we talk about this. There's a time to be on the stage and there's a time to be in the audience, and both are important in the lives. And so how I support him in his work and what he does, he has a chance and opportunity to support me in both. I think for him at this age, with the particular career path he is on, it's important for him to learn that.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons. Also, his particular learning needs, he's extremely smart. He gets bored easily. He may or may not have gotten that from his mama.
I did not.
He wasn't, and we had this candid conversation, he wasn't completing his work at school. He wasn't thriving in the traditional school environment. And so I was seeing my little boy, who I had the chance to have a lot of time with him during COVID and help him develop some of the foundational skills of learning and a love of reading and a love of writing stories and writing books, coming home and not wanting to write and not wanting to read. And I'm like, well, who in the world is this? Like, this is not, like, this is going against all of the things that I purposefully, as a former English teacher.
Yeah, like, it's not work, it's play. This is playtime, this is fun.
That I purposely instilled in him, I'm seeing it right before my eyes go away at 7 years old.
Yeah.
Like, maybe at 16, but not at 7, doggone it. Like, this is not, it's not gonna happen. And so we had the conversation. He actually advocated, he asked to be homeschooled. We talk about what does it mean to be neurodivergent and have different learning needs.
That's a big word for a second grader.
Yes. So what does it mean to be neurodivergent?
It's your brain works differently from other brains.
Mm-hmm. Versus a neurotypical. So I got him a book called a kid's book about neurodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
And he
in what way does it work different? Because everybody's brain works
yes.
a little different.
But would you like to share? We want mommy to share. How does your brain work different?
So instead of, if your parents make like food in like the same way, like every day, and then they change it once,
mm-hmm.
you may not like the new food, but you still eat it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the neurodivergent brain, that could lead to crying, mm-hmm. yelling, moving your body in big movements.
Hmm. Yeah. So those small things that seem small to others seem and feel really big. He has ADD,
mm-hmm.
and so some of the manifestations of that is how he pays attention and how we know that he is understanding and learning and how much work he can complete at a time if he's disinterested. The things that he needs to be successful, most kids need, to be 100% honest, but the particular system that he was in wasn't able to provide him those supports, even with, again, the advocate, even with the advocacy and the documentation, and this is what he needs. It wasn't happening.
Well, this is the perfect time to talk about She Built This City.
Yes.
Because some people who do just, as soon as you start, say, go to the book,
mm-hmm.
you've lost them.
Yeah.
But if you say, here, put this in your hand, now I'm going to show you, we're going to do this,
mm-hmm.
then boom, they get it.
Yeah.
Like, they just have to see somebody do it. I turn this screw this way, I hold this way,
mm-hmm.
and I know the touch. And there are people who cook that way.
Yeah.
They cook, like they make biscuits. And people say, how come I can't make biscuits like grandma? And the reason is because grandma didn't do it by a book.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't measure anything. She would put buttermilk and flour and eggs, and then she would do it to touch.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd make every ball every dough ball by touch. Mm-hmm. So what can you learn by picking up tools? You're going to need to be able to read plans and read a drawing and do math and all mm-hmm. that, yes. But what can you only learn by hitting the nail?
Yeah.
And by learning the feel of what makes it straight and when do I bend it one more time?
Yeah.
And what do they call that?
The tactile learner.
Tactile learner.
Or kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic, that's the big word.
I think there's a lot, I mean, you described it perfectly. And so there's a few things. There's the practical application. Learning about fractions and measurements is one thing in a book, in a classroom, in an isolated environment. Learning about fractions and measurement because you're building a picnic table, and if it's not even, your seat is not going to be straight. Like, it's you have a visual and a real life application to why are we doing this? And so that things that sometimes in the classroom take weeks to learn, one example of this is why the 1/4 is different from the 1/6. Like, this is why, you know, it clicks in a way that looking at it on the paper in a textbook doesn't click. So that's one thing. But just like you said, there's something about understanding the amount of pressure you need to put behind that screw so that it goes in at the right pace, and what you're listening for before that screw is stripped. I mean, just there's things about that. There's nuances to it through the apprenticeship model that you can only learn from someone else that takes away some of the concerns of neurodiverse learners who can't be still, you know, who learn by moving, who learn by doing. It breaks a barrier, and it doesn't work into their disadvantage. It actually works to their advantage. You have to do this, and this is the quickest way for you to learn.
Years ago, I had a woman on the podcast, my daughter's housemate, still is her housemate, mm-hmm. who was lost in high school until she got to shop class, until she got to under the hood of a car.
Yeah.
And then she took off, and she had a career in getting under the hood of a car. You've been an educator. Is there any evidence whatsoever that either men or women are more prone to tactile kinesthetic learning?
Stuart, that's an excellent question. I actually don't know any data around, you know, men or women prone to tactile learning. I do know that in the 1970s, when the trades were taken out of schools, we saw people of color in rural communities hurt the worst by that decision. And so let that say what it says about the populations that might, you know, impact more. But we know that those pathways were lucrative. If you look at, go back in history, you know, of any major black city, you know, you have Black Wall Street and small black communities around the country. Those were all founded by tradespeople, masons, electricians.
And now, what do we need? Can't get
anything.
A robot come in my house and mm-hmm. fix a septic line leak.
Exactly.
You know? And master electricians and master carpenters, cabinet builders.
All those things.
Custom carpenters.
There's a study out there called Dark by 2050 that says at the rate we're going, at the rate we're losing electricians versus the pipeline that's coming in, we will not have any electricians to power the electricity in our country by 2050. So we're already at a deficit.
Yeah.
And electricians make $100,000 a year.
Oh, absolutely. And if you want to work somebody, if you want to go to Santa Monica, mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. a job.
Exactly.
If you want to go to New York, there's a job. If you want to go to Chicago, there's a job.
There's a job. Always
you
a
might
job.
Be a union, might not be a union. You can hang out your own shingle.
An entrepreneur.
Independent contractor.
Exactly.
You can only work with lighting if you wish.
Your choice.
You could only work with neon lighting if you wished.
There's the gig economy.
Yeah.
The TaskRabbit, the Handy.
Yeah.
.com, all those things.
You could work whenever you want.
Anytime.
Just like an Uber.
Yeah.
And there'll always be somebody who needs you.
Always.
Yeah.
And so that's a conversation that we haven't been having. And so bringing the circle back to She Built the City, I believe that is a perspective that I brought to the table that the conversation wasn't being had. You know, there have been trades training programs in our cities for decades. But what she witnessed it differently. What I will say is there is the kind of person, whatever demographic you want to associate it with it, who if they see a flyer that says, oh, construction training, they're going to sign up. That's for me. They're going to sign up. And that's who was signing up. But there's a person who never even considered construction. And if that flyer went by, they wouldn't even look at it because that's not for me. Who with just a conversation, just one hands-on opportunity to build a bench, be like, well, doggone it, I can do this. Sign me up for that class. And that is who she built the City Engages. And so with that model of the breaking down barriers, opening doors to communities who've never been presented, even presented with the opportunity before, this allows them to now take that opportunity. So when we look at our March class of 2023 that graduated, we had 15 women graduate from that class.
Congratulations.
To that date, that was the largest class. As we speak, we're in two cities now, Charlotte and Greensboro. We have 61 people enrolled in class.
Congratulations.
And so that's in 1 year, through word of mouth mostly in social media, we are now seeing people, again, never knew or always wanted. We have a lot of women in our cohort whose dad was a contractor, but who was told, this, you can't do this. This is not for you. And now they're getting their chance. I always wanted to do this. They wouldn't let me. So the door has been open now, and now you can't shut it because now we know how to take off the hinges.
That's a pretty good line. You rehearsed that line. I set you up. What is the purpose of She Built This City?
She Built This City is a 501c3 nonprofit that focuses on igniting interest and building pathways for youth, women, and marginalized communities into the lucrative skilled trade careers.
Good for you. And also, you could work on the assembly line in Detroit.
Yes.
With some of these skills.
Absolutely.
They need electricians, and they need, and there are a lot of them, they need plumbers in the big plants, et cetera.
Absolutely. It could go anywhere. It could be residential, industrial, commercial. She Built the City has two pathways for our adults, I'll say, into the skilled trades. We have our free job training class that was I was referencing before. 9 weeks, they get their OSHA 10 safety certification. They learn basic tools, they do construction math, and they get early exposure to the vocabulary tools and mannerisms or mechanisms of painting, electrical, plumbing, and carpentry. So that's what we call our tour of the trades. We then have a 2-year full-time apprenticeship where we do critical home repair. So we hire specific graduates from our free job training program to work full-time for She Built This City. And in those 2 years with us, they're doing critical home repair. So they're learning more about skilled trades by serving the underserved populations in our city to help the affordable housing crisis.
It's a win-win-win.
Win-win-win, Stuart. It's a win-win-win. And so we launched that program. We launched the critical home repair program last year. And we're working in several neighborhoods across Charlotte to be able to provide that to elderly people who could not afford to do the repairs themselves.
Who created the organization?
She Built the City was founded by a woman named Demi Knight Clark. She spent 20 years in the construction industry and got tired of being the only woman in the room. She launched this nonprofit out of that passion. She translated into that mission in December of 2019. We all know what happened in 2020. But what could have really demolished an early emerging nonprofit, through her ingenuity, she flipped the script and sort of pushed the organization forward with some major initiatives. And so we began to do 3D printing. We 3D printed face shields for first responders and then educators. We then, she bought a 1975 Airstream. I think Scooby-Doo, you get an image of a Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo van.
Gutted it and turned it into our mobile tool lab. And so by August of 2020, I joined in June of 2020 without a construction background. We'll talk about that more. And by August of 2020, we were in the community doing hands-on builds.
Is she still around?
She's still in the area. She has her own construction company now. So go ahead.
Oh, I want to talk to her.
Yes, absolutely. So what we, I came on in June of 2020. My background was in education and nonprofits. And so I was very passionate, still am, about community development and empowerment and education. I saw pathways within workforce development and in construction that I had never seen before. Thinking about the students that I serve on the border of Texas and Mexico and the poverty that they faced and the limited possibilities that they had outside of the classroom, I saw construction as a pathway that would have changed lives. And so I latched on to that. I was like, oh, this makes sense. You don't need a four-year degree. But by your fourth year of an apprenticeship, where you never have to take on debt, you could be making $80,000 a year. Yes, like very simply, it was like, this makes a whole lot of sense for the populations I've been serving. So I came on as the chief operating officer at first. We served together for about a year and a half, and I became the executive director in March, in 2021. And from there, we began to build up our adult programming model in training women in the skilled trades because of COVID. While COVID hurt everybody, and we're still trying to figure out our way out of what COVID has done to us as a society, it hit women hardest and women of color even more because of the industries that were most impacted. So you had your hospitality, your retail, your early childhood. Those are all heavily women-dominated industries. And we saw women who might have never considered construction as an option before the pandemic were like, why not? During and after.
Okay. I'm going to get you out of your speechifying.
This is just comes out of me.
I know. What can a child who identifies as a boy mm-hmm. only learn from a strong male role model, if anything? Is there a place for a man in a boy's life?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think all genders' representations are needed and valued in the rearing of any child.
So what does that look like? Like, is it grandfather, uncle?
Anyone. So in our family, it's daddy, it's papa, it's uncles, it's godfathers, it's mentors, it's a whole village. Go ahead. Who else? You want to ask somebody?
Friends?
Yes, there's friends. There's a whole village of individuals who've surrounded themselves by our family, and my little one in particular. With the role that a man plays, it's a significant role. I think, I'm going to get this wrong, I'm not going to offend someone as I say this, but there are things I can, okay, again, y'all hear me out, those listening. I can teach him how to be a man. I can teach him the things that, you know, curriculum, the teacher, give me the things that a man needs to know how to do. I, LaToya Foster, can teach him those things. I cannot show him how to be a man. Mm-hmm. Does that make? And so there's things that only a man can show him how to do. There's a school of philosophy within parenting.
Other than writing your name in pee in the snow. And maybe,
yes.
I don't know. I'm not going to sell you short. But other than that, okay. useful things.
Yes, because there's a school of thought within parenting that there are things that are taught and there are things that are caught. And our kids usually pick up on what's caught more than what's taught. So I, LaToya, can teach him principles of integrity that I would want any of my children. Like, it's just, I can teach him things, but there's only things that he's going to be able to learn from seeing, witnessing, being in the barbershop. Like, there's going to be things that only he's going to learn through those engagements that I would never be able to teach him. And so this is not She Built the City. Those of you who can't see, I'm talking into a pretend microphone with my spoon. These are not the views of She Built This City. These are specifically the views of LaToya Ariel Foster in the rearing of her son, Thaddeus Foster. Disclaimer.
Yes. Well, and I'm using the microphone spoon too.
What I admire about your son is, for somebody with in second grade with ADD who wants to answer every one of these questions, he's very restrained.
He's good.
Very restrained. That's wonderful.
This is his world. I've stepped into his world now. When I tell you the conversation on the way home is, Mommy, when can I start my own podcast, is what we're going to be discussing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I guarantee it.
All it takes is a little recorder and a couple of microphones. That's it. You see how it's done. It ain't brain science. This ain't being a master electrician. You just got to be able to talk to folk. Have you had pushback from men? When have you had pushback from men? And when have you had surprising amounts of support from men? What can men do to help you? And what is the biggest hurdle, the biggest sort of opposition?
Yeah. I would say it runs the gamut. There has not been any direct opposition to what we're doing. I think anybody, especially if you're in the construction industry, you know that the pipeline is drying up. You need help, period. You know, so there's been no outward opposition to what we are doing and what we need, what we're advocating for. We get a lot of dads of daughters on the opposite side that say, yeah, I support you. What do you need? I'll teach a class. Many of our instructors in our program are men. You know, because if you think about it, this is a white male dominated industry. Most of our instructors are white males. And they are allies. We value and need allies in this work. I would say sometimes we get questions about, like, can men join the program? And the answer is a yes. I always say that our mission is to focus on the equity in the trades. And so we recruit, focus on, and cater to women, because that's the delta, the change we're trying to make in the industry. But we do not turn anyone away. You know, so we welcome all, because, again, the industry needs people, period. And so we work to ensure that we can train whomever comes through our doors to be able to have the skill sets they need. Where we see opposition, we hear from our graduates. So those who are now in the field sometimes, unfortunately, are still some of the only women on the job sites. And so they'll get comments like, why are you out here? You sure you can handle that? Like, just, you know, the a little machismo of, like, you know, should you be here?
But as soon as they show they can, are they accepted, or do they constantly have to keep proving themselves?
We've seen cases of both. And that depends on the culture of that company, you know, and what they've instilled in being able to ensure that it feels like a place that women belong. One of the things that we're doing at our conference next week, we're having two areas we're focusing on. One is a maternity leave symposium, because that's another thing. So you can be an outward proponent of women in construction, but if your company's policies do not advocate for and support things that come with having women in construction, like a maternity leave policy or a nursing room or a female locker room, like, if you don't have those things, then you are just a voice, you know, to the movement, which we appreciate, but that doesn't truly make the changes. And so we are pushing for policy and advocacy, both on a corporation level as well as, you know, as a guideline policy level, so that we can see changes there.
On Moorhead Street, as I come in the morning, about 7 o'clock in the morning, I see lots of people in hard hats and bright yellow neon reflective vests walking over to the new high rises.
Yes.
When you watch those people go into those high rises to literally build the new skyline of Charlotte, what do you see?
You're seeing more women on job sites. You're seeing more women on job sites.
Still very much
small.
A fraction.
Small population. So I was going to say, you know, you see men and women, mostly men, who are going about their daily normal, not worried about what society or people are thinking about it. They're going to go home with a really good paycheck, with job security. They're hopefully doing something that they love. You know, that is one of the things that we discussed. We did a youth program a few years ago, and there was a young man who I feel like his dad was staring daggers in the back of my head after our program, because he said, growing up before our youth program, he thought that he would drive by those construction sites and see people on the site and think that they were miserable. Oh, they only could do that because they couldn't get a job anywhere else. But now he realized how esteemed of a profession it was, and that he may actually want to do that. And his words that I think made his dad cut side eyes at me, he's like, I used to want to be a doctor. Now I think I may go into construction. And his dad was like, what? But because it's this image of, like, unfortunately, I am an advocate of college. You know, if my son chooses college, we support that. But college isn't the only way. And there's been a few generations of people being taught that college was the only way to success. And if you don't go to college, then you've chosen a trade, then you weren't good enough for college.
So I really salute you.
Thank you.
I admire what you're doing. I only have one more question. If we all got struck by lightning today, and the only thing that survived was this little piece of digital audio, what is your legacy?
Ooh. What is my legacy? My legacy is Thaddeus Faustin.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is he chooses to do in his life, that he is happy on the inside, yeah, and that he is kind on the outside. That is a legacy. My legacy is the work that we've done here at She Built This City. The staff development that I had this morning was about DISC assessment. And those of you who are familiar with DISC.
Oh, yeah.
I am a D. I am as strong of a D as you can get.
What is D?
That is the dominance. The results, action, challenges. That is me. And so I move so fast, oftentimes, I do not celebrate successes. I'm on to the next problem, the next challenge. What is next? But I cannot deny the work that has been done here. You know, we started, I was the first staff member of She Built the City. We now have 21, you know, so it's like, I am humbled, I'm overwhelmed. We're going into 3 buildings this year, you know, that we are the sole tenant, whereas we used to have co-working or co-shared space. And so it's just, it's overwhelming. It is humbling, but I hope and pray that the legacy is one of access, one of opportunity, and one of shattered ceilings. I know you don't want those. You didn't want them. What? One of truly shattered, truly shattered ceilings of women who are building this city.
Latoya Foster, I acknowledge you. I admire you.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. You're a busy, busy woman. And God bless you.
Thank you, Stuart. It's been an absolute pleasure. I truly enjoyed it.
Thank you, young man. Good luck. Remember the little people when you're in Hollywood.
Latoya Foustin, it was a privilege meeting you. And then I found that the acting U.S. Secretary of Labor was coming to your place today, the day this podcast drops, and that the mayor and our local member of Congress, Alma Adams, are going to be there. It's no accident. This is smoking hot. This is a hot area. I don't care if it's girls, boys, whatever. Learning the trades. Learn to repair, a car. It teaches us something, this kind of hands-on learning. It's something I wish I knew. I really do. Maybe I can go to community college. I'll go to CPCC. Thank you, Latoya Foustin. You have inspired me.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported manlistening.com, In Her Words, the podcast, and now Voice Locket, voicelocket.com. I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.